I'm Michael Kist of Bleeding Green Nation, and I invite you, gentle listener, to join us for the best analysis of the Super Bowl champion Philadelphia Eagles in the business. BGN Radio provides you with the most informative preview shows, and the Kist and Solak show dives deep into all the scheme and X and O details you could ever want. Plus discussions with the industry's brightest minds, including former NFL players, and press conferences from the Eagles coaching staff to keep you up to date and informed every step of the way. Subscribe to Bleeding Green Nation today. Fly, Eagles, fly.
Playing a long drive, there it is, number 500, the career 500th home run for Michael Jack Smith.
Rollins slides, Rollins has won it, they stream out of the dugout, yeah. Rollins by yeah. Near third, this game is over.
It is out of here, 50th home run of the year for Ryan Howard.
Ruiz out to get it. The throw from his knees. It's in time. And it's a no-hitter. Unbelievable. Ruiz and Helen.
Oh, Chase is going to keep going. And he's safe at home plate.
Wow.
Chase Utley, you are the man.
Swing and a miss. Struck him out. The Philadelphia Phillies are 2008 World Champions of Baseball.
Now batting for the Phillies, second baseman John Stolness.
Hey there, podcast pals, and welcome to another edition of Hittin' Season. This is episode number 215. I'm John Stolness from The Good Fight and NumberFire.com. Follow me on Twitter at John Stolness. You won't know all that stuff. And we are recording here on Sunday night, and as you know, the Sunday night team is back once again as we finish up the 2018 regular season. Joining me once again is Liz Rocher, the managing editor for The Good Fight. And she is also with Yahoo Sports. You can follow Liz on Twitter at Liz Rocher. Hi, Liz. What a great series the Phillies played. It's over. I mean, maybe we should just be happy that it's all over now, Liz. How are you?
Did the Phillies play this weekend? Are they ready to go? Is it time? Are they starting now? Is it starting now?
All four games were rained out. All four games were rained out. They're making up all four.
It's not going to bother to play them. Isn't that great?
Yeah, yeah. Because it doesn't really matter.
I even wrote the recap for two of these games, and I'll be damned if I remember any of them.
Yeah, well, I think unless you the only way to get through this weekend in Atlanta was to drink. I mean, that's really the only.
I did a lot of that. I'm not going to lie.
Well done.
I did a lot of that.
And also joining us is Justin Clue, the assistant managing editor of The Good Fight. Justin and Liz also host Continued Success, as you most likely know, on The Good Fight podcast feed. And Justin is also one half of the podcast team, The Dirty Inning. Justin is on Twitter at Justin_Clue. Hey, buddy, how's it going? How was your weekend?
You know, it's over, but it's not technically over. So now we enter that part of the season where it just feels like we're looking out the window at all the other kids who aren't grounded, and they're like all having a great time out there in broad daylight, and we're just kind of like, well, okay, guess it's not time to go to bed yet. But
that was always fun. I love that. That was always a blast when I remember being a kid doing that. That's torture. I mean, I forgot about that. That's really torture, and that's what this week is going to be like. But here's the deal: for we have been rightfully so. Largely negative on these podcasts the last few weeks. And why wouldn't we be? The Phillies went from having the second best record at the start of August in the National League to being the worst team in the National League over these last 6 weeks since then. The Phillies just got swept in four games in Atlanta. It was a pretty non-competitive series. They've essentially been non-competitive for the last 6 weeks. It's been hard to watch. It was hard to watch the Braves celebrate on Saturday afternoon, clinching the National League East. The Phillies officially got knocked out of the wild card after losing 2-1 on Sunday. They're just one game over 500 as they set out for a four-game road trip against a very tough Colorado Rockies team that still has a ton to play for in the National League West. Right now, in my mind, it feels more likely this team's going to finish below 500 than they will above 500, which seems crazy to think about.
Positive.
It's absolutely going to happen.
We're spiraling.
It's absolutely going to happen. I mean, I know. And I don't, you know, we can talk about that, but I think we want to try and focus on some of the positives on the show this week on this particular podcast, because we'll have plenty of time to be negative. You know, you guys will do a Continued Success this week. I'll do Hittin' Season 216 later in the week. And, you know, we'll certainly, you know, look at this with a more sober lens because it has been pretty bad. But as I sit here and we're getting ready to watch 1 week of absolutely meaningless baseball, I am heartened, Liz, by the fact that it's just 1 week as opposed to 2 months or 3 months or really starting on opening day, watching 6 months of meaningless baseball when you know going into the season that the Phillies didn't have a chance. You know, I thought Matt Gelb put it really well in The Athletic when he was writing about, you know, that this team was, this team made you care about what they did. They made you mad. They made you frustrated. They were crazy to watch this year. They were a lot of times really boring and it's some tough baseball, but they made you care here in 2018. And the fact that we only have 1 week of completely meaningless baseball instead of 6 months worth of meaningless baseball means I think they did take a step forward this year. Liz, what about you?
I've had more to say about the Phillies this year than I've had to say for a few years. I had a lot to say last year, but this year it was, I mean, they made me excited, but they made me angry. They baffled me. They frustrated me, you know, but even if the emotion is just anger, you know, or just, I don't even know what it is, just passion, I guess. It's just aimless passion that's just shooting out of us from random angles. But, you know, no matter what it is, we all just sort of cared a whole lot. You're right. And that is not nothing. That is a tremendous step forward. They have players that are worth giving a shit about. Which is, I mean, it's so far beyond what last year was. Like, we've all forgotten about last year. I don't blame anyone. I wanted to forget about it. We all have wanted to forget about last year and the year before that. So anyone who says, you know, you've forgotten what it was like last year. Yes. Yes, I have. I've worked very hard. I've drank a lot of alcohol to try and forget what last year was like. Now there's only room for this year. And this year, while frustrating, was interesting. At least I didn't want to, you know, the games the last month have been frustrating, but not in a stabbing my eyes with knitting needles kind of way, which is what it was last year. Like that in and of itself, beyond all the small steps forward, you know, that every player, you know, the players have taken and all that, this is the biggest improvement, that this is an interesting team. They've made it interesting. The goal of baseball is to win games. It may be not the interesting Olympics, but at least it's something.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's true. And Justin, I think that as we look at this team, because we have had so much invested in this team when they were in first place, when they were 15 games over 500, as I listen to national broadcasters talk about the Phillies, they're much higher on this team than a lot of the local media and even us sometimes are. You know, there are some pie-in-the-sky optimists regarding the future of this team, but the more I listen to some of the national guys, they're much more bullish on this Phillies team, I think, than a lot of Phillies fans are, a lot of local Phillies writers are, some local Phillies commentators are. There are some national guys, I think, that really don't care for Gabe Kapler and his managing style and maybe even his personality, and it might go back long before he was the manager of this team. And so there's a lot of national criticism of the manager, but I think of the talent level overall on this team, I had Eno Saris from The Athletic on the podcast this week, and he was very positive, very bullish on the future of this baseball team. Helped me feel a little bit better about things too. And it's important to remember that maybe our lenses are a little bit skewed because we are so close to this team.
If you were somebody who just was trying to compare the Phillies to last year and the years before, and then just like took a glance at what they did this year, I think it would be pretty easy to be positive. I think we've said numerous times that it's our close look at this team that's made people so negative. It's the way they went about getting their record. I think that, even though it is it is still over 500 by, you know, barely, but it is, that's an accomplishment for this team given how the past couple of years have gone. I mean, the summary you quoted to start this off, it wasn't really saying anything that people haven't been saying all season long. It just kind of said it differently. You know what I mean? Like, it's, we've all known that the reason this team was so frustrating was because they weren't frustrating at first. Like, that's where that came from. Honestly, what Liz said about these players being interesting, that's a big part of this, because the Phillies have essentially like rebooted these, good or bad, these are the Phillies now. There's a whole bunch of, like, if you go on the baseball reference page for the 2017 versus 2018 versus 2016 teams, you'll see a bunch of faces on there that the main difference between them in the past couple of years is that the rest of their baseball is still in front of them. And this year we learned a lot about a bunch of those players. And, you know, presumably at least some of them aren't going to be here next year. I personally think part of the problem this year was that this was, you know, this was a big year for so many different guys on this team. And there just wasn't enough space for all of them to have the year they needed to have. And I think that probably wound up hurting a couple of them. But if we're coming at this from a positive standpoint, that you could look at the league now at the end of the season, and there's a lot of subgroups you can just throw teams into. I mean, there's a couple of like really, really good teams, a couple of great teams, and a couple of really bad teams. And the Phillies sort of distinguished themselves by being this weird middle of the pack team. They didn't revolutionize baseball by finishing the year close to 500 or anything. But it was more like, just look at their own division. The Nationals were supposed to be really good, and they were not. But the Phillies were like supposed to be building, and that can mean anything. That can mean you come out as the Braves of this season, where everything came together really fast, or the the rebuilding is still happening, and you're still stumbling, and you're still figuring out who goes where. And at first, they looked like one team, and then they looked like another team. And that was happening because of the inconsistencies of the players. So it was just like, who is this team? And so many other teams kind of know who they are, you know, they know they're the 100 loss, 110 loss Orioles, or they're the 105 win Red Sox. You know, you can know moving forward, you can bet on Mookie Betts. You should not bet on, do you know the name of any Orioles players? Caleb Joseph. There's one.
Chris Davis. Yeah. The worst player in baseball by a mile, Chris Davis this year.
But the Phillies, you know, I guess if you're looking for a positive, it's because there's still some question marks on the team. There's a few less, so presumably they'll use that to clear things up. But yeah, they had such a strange season that you could be high on them, you could be low on them. But they kind of distinguished themselves by being this sort of a weird sub team that didn't really exist in any other division in baseball, from what I could see. I think their closest comparison was like the Mariners, but just like season wise, how things went, where they like, oh, everything's really promising. Okay, that's over. The promising part is over, and we're watching the other teams in this division take over.
Right.
But yeah.
Well. And I think that's part of the thing that is a little bit unsettling, is that you're right. This was supposed to be a year where we learned a little bit more about some of these guys. And, you know, frankly, the guys that we saw a lot of are the guys who disappointed a little bit, like Scott Kingery, you know, I mean, like Aaron Altair, the guys that, and I did a piece for The Good Fight this week where I was looking at wins above replacement numbers and really surprised by how low the wins above replacement numbers are, both for Fangraphs WAR and for Baseball Reference WAR, for basically all the position players. And as I was looking at the Phillies players as opposed to the other National League teams, all the other National League teams have at least one or two guys that you could say are potential MVP type players. And the Phillies, just because they either have in Rhys Hoskins, a guy who's really good offensively but not good at all defensively, Rhys Hoskins is never going to win an MVP award. It's just, you know, it's unless he's hitting like 55 bombs and he's got 20 more than anybody else, it's hard to see that. So what you have with the Phillies right now is, I think you do have a two-man core. And I kind of want to dip into something Ken Rosenthal of Fox Sports put out in a video on Saturday when looking ahead to this offseason, talking about the moves that the Phillies could make and a lot of the different trade scenarios that are out there. Basically, he said that there are two untouchables on this team, Aaron Nola and Rhys Hoskins. We're going to talk about each of those guys coming up in just a second as we talk about things this year that we've seen that we feel really good about. Obviously, Nola and Hoskins are two things that we feel really good about this year, and that's one of the reasons that, according to Rosenthal, the Phillies have made those two guys untouchables in trades. That basically means, however, that everybody else is up for grabs on the roster, which also kind of means that we either have learned enough about some of these guys that we know they're not a part of the team moving forward, or the jury's still out and, hey, make us an offer and we'll let you know. So Liz, I mean, is this enough of a core for you? The Aaron Nola, Rhys Hoskins core? Is this okay as a starting off point?
Yeah, I'm fine with that. I mean, I can't think of any other player on the Phillies that I'd be upset about losing for the right return. Like, I was annoyed that when Crawford, you know, when it sounded like Crawford was being made available and no one else. But if he is available along with Scott Kingery and literally everyone else except for Nola and Hoskins, then I'm fine with that. The Phillies have been able – they're entering a period where they're going to have to start choosing. Like, they're not going to just be able to build with no capital of any kind anymore. They're going to have to either spend, you know, money, or they're going to have to spend prospect capital. They're going to have to choose one or the other to build the team they want, because now they at least they think they know what they have, and they just have to make decisions now, and whatever they are, they have to commit to it. And, you know, opening up the rest of the roster and saying, everyone come take a look and give us your best offer, that's at least dedication to building a winning team, because it's a recognition that they know they don't have one.
Yeah.
That's the most important thing to me, is that they understand that the team that they have right now, as it's constructed, if, you know, if the ceilings of these players are what we think they are, the roster they have now can't get it done, obviously. So they need to, and, you know, beyond that, they have to make contingency plans. If they don't get either Harper or Machado or both or none, whatever it is, they have to make a contingency plan and be ready for what happens to them if they don't land a marquee player.
That would be a nightmare scenario.
Let's
Justin.
Not think about it too much.
Yeah, let's not think about it too much. But I think, you know, let's talk about the Ken Rosenthal report, Justin. And, you know, one of the things I thought was interesting was that Rosenthal noted that it would be doubtful that of all the other players not named Reese Hoskins and Aaron Nola on this team, that it would be, he mentioned specifically that it would be doubtful that they trade Carlos Santana, because as Rosenthal said, it would be like an admission that signing him was a mistake. Now, we don't know specifically if Rosenthal was getting that vibe from the Phillies, like the Phillies were telling him, we're probably not going to move him because that would kind of feel like we messed up with that signing and we don't want to do that. My guess is that's just Rosenthal sprinkling his opinion in there. But do you really think the Phillies would resist trading Santana for that reason? Or is that's cuckoo, right?
That's asinine. If that's the case, that's utterly stupid, because if everyone is if everyone is touchable except for Aaron Nola and Reese Hoskins, that means Scott Kingery isn't untouchable, who was given a 6-year extension before playing a major league inning. And if they're willing to trade him and that's not considered embarrassing, but
good
Santana
point.
Is, that doesn't make any sense to me. Santana, like, yeah, we signed this veteran to play a position we already had a guy for. It didn't work out. The way people wanted, and now we're trading it. What is embarrassing about that? I don't think you even have to explain that trade to the majority of the fan base.
Right. I'd rather my team admit a mistake than keep a guy for forever, you know?
Why are we worried about pride all of a sudden? Has anybody watched this team for the last 8 weeks?
The vanity that would be involved in making that decision is kind of astonishing, because it would just mean that they care about appearances more than they care about winning.
And I have to say that I disagree with Liz on that. I don't consider two players a core. And to be honest, I don't even really feel like we saw a great season from Reese Hoskins anyway. I mean, I'm not saying they should go out and trade them. But that he gets automatically put into the middle like that just because the Phillies want him to be and have treated him from a PR standpoint as if he is. I think they were certainly expecting a bigger season from him. And don't get me wrong, like I want him here, but I want the version of him that they thought they were going to get to be here. And for him to automatically be counted as like a member of the core is like, well, I'm getting a little ahead of ourselves here. And to me, when you talk about like the 2008 core, you're talking about 5-6 guys who all play different positions. You definitely need more pitching. I mean, you know, you can't just say, oh, well, we have a first baseman playing in left field and we have a good starting pitcher, and that is our core. To me, that's like, okay, that's like, I don't know. I don't want to like say my problem is with the vocabulary we're using, but like that's, I guess, the foundation, you know, that's the starting point to assemble the core. Because right now it's not like you can win the World Series with a great starting pitcher and Reese Hoskins. Like, that's obviously, you're going to need more than that, and the Phillies need more than that. So I can't say it's exactly encouraging for them to be like, well, we have two players we like. One is we're pretending is better than he was. The other one is a Cy Young contender. And other than that, everyone is available except, you know, the old veteran first baseman who were embarrassed to trade. That would be, you know, unthinkable. So that I'm not super encouraged by.
I do want to at least clarify that it's not obviously the entirety of a core. It is a start. It's a good start, I think. At least I think it's a good start. I don't disagree with anything you said, Justin, but you know, they at least have players they like, they know they want to hang on to. Whether they're going to end up being exactly what they want them to be is the gamble that every baseball team makes, you know, when they have unknown quantities. They sort of have to put their money somewhere. And why not with those two guys?
Well, and we have seen that the way the Phillies are going to restock this team is not coming through the minors. If you read any of those, the post that Matt Gelb wrote for The Athletic this week, where he talked about the position players coming through the minors right now, it is an ugly scene as far as position players are concerned in the Phillies minor league system. And the Phillies just the number of decisions that Matt Klentak and this team has to make this offseason, it's overwhelming. I don't even know where you begin. You have to, I guess, focus on which of these big name guys are you going to be able to get. And then once you've locked those guys in, then you can start worrying about moving some of the other guys. But there's some inherent danger in that, too, in that if you wait too long, and we saw how slow the free agent market was last year, I don't think the big money guys are going to take that long to move. But when you see that, you saw how long it took teams to act last offseason. The Phillies have a ton of moves they need to make. And maybe they come out and they're the team that's setting the market and stuff's flying off the shelves because they know they have to kind of clear the shelves here. But man, the number, I don't even know, like if I was going to sit down and write a piece about what I would do if I were Matt Klentak this offseason, I don't know where I would start. I'd need like 5 days to work that out.
Glad I don't have that job to either do that or write about it, because it seems like there's so many moving parts there. And that is, I know we're trying to stay positive, but that is one of the more discouraging aspects of reaching the end of the season, is realizing that there are so many decisions that need to be made. They knew that was going to be part of this offseason, certainly. But I think as we all imagined it, it was like, the Phillies will have these players that turn out to be really good, and then they'll hit this free agent market. Like, they probably won't win the World Series, but like, you know, maybe we'll see some improvements, and then they'll hit this awesome free agent market and fill in some holes with some of the game's premier players. You know, it's not like they've repelled necessarily anybody, but at the same time, you know, some of the stuff that you see reputation wise across baseball regarding the Phillies and how they are managed tells you that sometimes, you know, there's some players who might not want to fit into a system like that. It might not just be if it's between the Phillies and somebody else. It's like, well, I want to go to a team that's like playing for another team, not I'm playing for this team and there's this different way they do things. And, you know, the perception of that might alter things. So, you know, it's a different situation than I think a lot of people thought they were going to be in. And you're right. I don't envy Matt Klentak at all, because there's just a lot of adjustments that need to be made.
And this was sort of about, I want to at least point out that they did this to themselves in a lot of ways from last offseason. They put off decisions that, you know, either they didn't, you know, they weren't getting the offers they wanted or whatever it was, but they made decisions and didn't make decisions that is now going to require them to make a whole lot more choices than they would have had to a year ago. You know, and it's just because they put things off and signed some guys that now they sort of have like twice decisions to make than they would have had to. So let's not forget that as discouraging as this is, they engineered it to be this way. And so my sympathy is going to be limited, and the amount of, you know, the amount of leash I give these decisions is going to be smaller, because again, they did not have to be here. We spent all of last offseason saying that.
I am so excited for there to be less players on this team. That is that.
Oh, I kind of am too.
I can't wait for some cuts to happen. Like that.
It's too much.
It's starting to just like weigh on me. Like the, how you feel when you drop off a bunch of stuff at Goodwill. You're just like, all right, I'm living a leaner life. This is great. I just I can't wait.
We're producing like tribbles.
Oh my God.
Every time you look, Justin, there's like five other Jose Bautistas.
Remember when Trevor Plouffe was on the team?
No.
Oh my gosh, Trevor Plouffe. Oh my gosh, this has been such a weird season. All right, well let's talk about some of the things that we feel good about at least. And obviously, you know, let's stay on Hoskins for just a couple more minutes, Justin. And I saw somebody tweeted this stat out. This is Joseph M. Jameson on Twitter. Tweeted this out. Good tweet at Joseph M. Jameson. He said, "If you take away April, here's what you have." And I still feel good about Rhys Hoskins this season, but not great about it for this reason. If you look at since April, starting in May, Rhys Hoskins hit .236 from May till the end of the season with 28 homers, 74 RBI, and an .819 OPS. Carlos Santana hit .249, 13 points higher, with 21 homers, 7 fewer, 72 RBI, two fewer, and the same OPS of .819. So, obviously, Rhys Hoskins did not have a phenomenal season. Justin, you mentioned it just a second ago. The power numbers were fantastic, and he has over 30 homers and 30 doubles. He's one of only a handful of players to do that this year. And I think, you know, this is also kind of like he's really the only true power hitter in this lineup. In a lineup where the offensive philosophy is walk, walk, home run, the Phillies want to score most of their runs by hitting multi-run home runs. Rhys Hoskins is really the only guy they have that can do that. I can understand why he's an untouchable, because you want to add to that guy rather than move that guy and then have to find another home run guy and more to bring onto this lineup. That being said, I do think Hoskins has cemented himself as one of the National League's best power hitters. This was his first full season in the majors, and I do expect him, and he said as much after the game on Sunday, he's disappointed in how uneven he's been this year. I think he's a guy that can figure that out a little bit and smooth out some of these uneven stretches, and that's why I feel good about Rhys Hoskins moving into 2019. What say you?
Yeah, I can understand that. I mean, that's why I said I don't think he's somebody they should be looking to trade right now. I guess, yeah, it is. I guess just looking at his numbers and looking at the way that it's just noticeable the contrast between how the Phillies expected him to be this year versus how he actually turned out. I'm a little wary.
Do you really think they expected him to be a whole lot better? Like,
I think they trotted him out. Who was it calling homes in the Philadelphia area to tell you about school closings in the morning? That was Rhys Hoskins. Who's on the commercials telling you, hey, this is Rhys Hoskins of the Philadelphia Phillies. Don't forget to lock your car when you are leaving to go to the mall. Who got trotted out to the Sixers games to ring the bell? You know, he was their boy. He's the face of the franchise. He's who they wanted everybody to be talking about this year. They wanted him to be the guy, and he still can be the guy. He still can. This year he was not. And I think they got a little ahead of themselves when I say that. That's what I mean. And I'm talking from like a PR standpoint. But he proved to be just as much in development as everyone else. So when I say that, I think it's okay if you want to consider him untouchable, but, just making him a part of that core. If you were just looking at the numbers from this year and you said to someone unfamiliar with the roster, who do you think should be on the team next year? I'm thinking they don't necessarily cut him, but their eyes kind of go, he doesn't have any eye popping stats, for the most part, especially if you take away April. But I'm a little wary of measuring stats with like subtracting significant chunks of them. I think you kind of run into like, well, then why are we doing any of this kind of territory pretty quick?
Right, April counts for sure. Yeah,
I mean, no, you talk about him being one of the most prolific sluggers in the National League right now, and his slugging percentage was under 300 for the month of May, and that was back when the Phillies were good. So
that's right.
But I digress. I think he should be a part of the team moving forward. But I mean, when you talk about guys who didn't take the leap you wanted them to take this year, I think he's number one on that list. Absolutely.
Liz, do you share that? You share that thought about Hoskins? Do you think he disappointed in any a little bit in 2018?
I think he did. I think it was his unevenness that really is what it was. But I don't know if we will be able to choose, because we can either get the Rhys Hoskins that, you know, hits home runs in bunches, you know, paired with the Rhys Hoskins that really doesn't do that at all. Or, I mean, if you wanted to even out, I guess what we get is something mediocre all the way through. And I don't know. Mm. I would much rather a guy that has flashes of brilliance and periods of frustration than a guy that's wholly, you know, unimpressive, because at least you feel like there's something to build off of. You know, you have those flashes, like, you know, even to the very end of a guy like Dominic Brown, you looked at that outburst of home runs he had in that May. And you're like, there is something here, you know, and there's almost always a reason to give him a chance, you know? So I would much rather have a guy like that. But, you know, it was frustrating to watch, because you wanted those good periods to be longer than they were. And I think that more than anything else is what he should work on, as opposed to like, all right, how do I do this great thing all the time? Maybe just focus on how can I do this great thing a little bit longer than I was before.
Yeah. Or when I stop doing this great thing, how do I stopping doing this great thing? That's terrible language. That's terrible English.
We got
but
you.
I'm going with it. How do I stop stopping this great thing more or less frequently? Let's move on.
If Rhys Hoskins is listening, then he's definitely fixed everything just by what he's saying. That's by God,
listen, John Maley, make the call. Him on the staff.
Why didn't I just not do the not good not thing? That never entered my head. Ah, damn it. So much lost time.
I feel like I need to start a series of instructional videos from my home. I don't know why I haven't. Let's talk about Aaron Nola here. I mean, obviously, what a feat. What a season from Aaron Nola. This is the one guy on the team you can unequivocally say, yes, I mean, standing ovation. What if, I mean, 200 innings, his first 200 inning season, 200 innings in Major League Baseball right now is a real rarity. He wants to make all his starts this year, so he is going to make his final start against the Braves in Philadelphia next week. And, you know, frankly, why not? What's another six innings? You know, at this point, it's not going to hurt anything for Aaron Nola to make one more start. So go ahead, Aaron, make your last start. Get him all in. It really does matter to him. He wants to make every single start for the first time in his career.
Aww.
And so, isn't that cool? I think, you know, he's a guy. He's not a vocal leader. He's not a guy who's gonna be out in front leading this team, Liz. But you know, for Nola, I think this was just a season where, as good as I thought he was coming into the season, he obviously proved to be one of the very elite starters in baseball. And I think his season and how much he improved after reaching the majors is an encouragement to Nick Pivetta and Vince Velasquez that you may not have reached your ceiling yet. It is still possible to reach higher after reaching the majors, as Aaron Nola has shown. And so that's, I mean, obviously not everybody can do that, otherwise they would. But Aaron Nola's season here in 2018 as a legitimate Cy Young candidate, one of the great things to feel good about here in 2018, Liz.
I like that for him, making all of his starts is what's important. It, you know, for every player, there's something different that's important to them. And I love that. Like, I'm trying to remember, you know, I know that there are catchers out there that pay attention to leaderboards for framing and stuff like that. And, you know, there are things that are important to them and they want to stay on top of. And knowing that for Aaron Nola, he sort of wants to be like, well, you know, it's sort of like defeating the injury, the injuries that kept him out for two straight years. He missed, you know, some time. And so I love that that's what is important to him in this year. He's never going to be a vocal leader, but I've been so encouraged by watching him continue to do well, because there was a point last year in 2017 where he just sort of turned it on and had like 10 straight starts with two earned runs or less, something like that. And
And six innings or more. Yep. Yeah. Yeah.
And
it
was talked about, you know, what it was. He's like, I started putting more weight in my feet or in my legs or something like that. I started really working out to build all of that, you know, to make sure that I could stay more grounded in my pitching. And I'm like, well, that, I love hearing that. Like, this is what I did. This is what has led to success for me. You know, it should be encouraging to everyone, you know, not just, you know, pitchers, but hitters too. Like, you're called up to the majors sometimes because you're literally too good to keep down any longer. But sometimes you're called up because they need you to take a leap. And sometimes you're not going to take that leap right away. Sometimes you need more time. And, you know, we look at Scott Kingery and we wait because he is talented. He's a talented player. And he, at the very least, despite all of us saying he should spend some time in the minors this year, he hacked it in the majors for the whole year. He never hit too badly, too obviously. I mean, this is the lowest bar, but he never hit too obviously badly to be like.
He always held the bat from the right end. You know, you gotta give a guy.
You know, he didn't hit below the Mendoza line. You know, he kept it above 200. He, you know, for everything the Phillies asked him to do this year, he did it. He didn't do all of it well, but he survived it. And I think, you know, we're talking about Aaron Nola, but I at least want to say, you know, give Scott Kingery some well-deserved recognition for just.
Yeah. And he homered in the game. Mm-hmm. He homered in the game on Sunday, Liz. I think, you know, there's something to learn from the grind.
Yeah.
Right?
I mean, he was picked up from the minors and tossed directly into the majors, right into the stew. He was expected to do his job and then do a job that wasn't his. And he was then expected to do that the whole year. And he did it. It feels weird, but I'm proud of him for doing that and for surviving and for just continuing to show up every day and be excited to be there. You know? It never seemed like the frustration got to him too much. I think maybe that's...
So, Liz, what you're saying is you want him to get a participation trophy?
Oh, God. I don't know. Like, that is kind of what I'm saying, I guess. But, you know, in a season like we've had, I think we need to celebrate the small victories. I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
I totally agree with you, and I would frame it the same way, that, like, look, this season was what it was, and it sucked a lot, and Scott Kingery was not a very good baseball player for most of it, but Scott Kingery's never been a Major League Baseball player before, and John, you're absolutely right, there's something to learn from the grind, and you're right, he's still out there, and he hit a home run yesterday, so, again, the season was what it was, but you gotta give the dude credit for surviving, because it's something he's never done before, and he's still learning. I think the Phillies are going to be a better team next year, and if Scott Kingery is still here, which I'm kind of assuming he will be, I think he'll be a part of the reason they are better, because he's going to be better.
Yeah, I so desperately want them to put him in one spot, and that one spot being second base, and really see what he can do in that situation, because I do think part of his struggles offensively this year, and John Mailey said as much too when he was interviewed this last week, was moving around was hard on him. And you can understand that. He's not a guy who did that a lot in the minors. He was a second baseman, and to have to learn that at the major league level and learn how to hit major league pitching and the grind of being an everyday major leaguer when you probably didn't expect to be that right off the bat from the start of the season, getting that contract and probably feeling the pressure of having to perform to meet that contract. It probably was not a very easy thing for Scott Kingery. So that's a really good point. And I kind of want to think about it this way now, you know, as we're talking about things we feel good about. I'm going to mention a guy here who I'm especially proud of. And if you guys can think of anyone else that you want to talk about, let's do that. The guy I want to mention is Michael Franco, who I gave up on. I mean, we talked about it, and I guess it was in May. I guess it was May, or it may have even been before the All-Star break in June, where I was ready to be done. I had said, we know what Michael Franco is. 2016 and 2017 and the first part of 2018, that's 2.5 seasons where you're getting the same exact type of ball player. You know what you have in Michael Franco. And darned if that guy didn't turn it around here in this season. He went from a 230 batting average last year to 270 this year. A 281 on base to 312. A 409 slugging to 467. He had an above average weighted runs created of 105, way up from 76 last year. He actually had a wins above replacement of 1.2, according to Fangraphs, and hit 22 homers this season in only 130 games. He's missed some time this last couple weeks with some different ailments, and that has really hurt this offense. They've had to play Carlos Santana at third base a lot over that stretch because Michael Franco was out. Franco has, and I didn't think he would be able to do this, Franco has played himself into this team's plans, I would imagine, at least at this point for 2019. Of course, it depends on who they bring in. It depends on what kind of free agents they get. If Manny Machado does come to Philadelphia and he's willing to play third base, which I don't think he would be, that would, of course, change things entirely. But I'm really proud of Michael Franco because I did not see this type of season coming from him. I really didn't think he was I did not think he had this in him anymore. I'm looking at his second half stats. Bear with me just a second. Second half stats for Michael Franco, pretty good. 272, 304, 483. Weighted runs created at 109. I mean, that's pretty good. It's not superstar. And that's part of the problem with the guys on the Phillies offense right now is, like with Nick Williams, he saw some good things, some improvement, but not a superstar type player. But I think long and short, Michael Franco made some definite improvements this year, and I'm proud of him for doing that. I think Michael Franco had a solid season here in 2018. Any others you guys can think of?
I would say Vince Velasquez.
Yeah.
Definitely.
That's a good one.
He's somebody
who
did not have a great season this year, but not great is so much better than the season he had last year.
It's such an improvement.
Who knows what's going to happen, and that's not to, like, burn him in any way, because I'm speaking more from statistically – his numbers speak for themselves, but he was one of the most down on himself post game interviews I've ever seen. Probably the most down on himself interviews I've ever seen after bad starts. Especially, he would come out and just talk about how poorly he did, and clearly he was in his head, and baseball was in his head, and he was having a bad time when he was having a bad time. I think he's somebody else who we all know he set the bar really high early on in his Phillies career. Maybe we've all had the wrong impression about who he is since that point, but he had some starts this year that were really encouraging. He still suffers from throwing, 120 pitches in the first three innings of a game. In some cases he got lifted because Gabe Kapler was trying to scare the offense into existing. But I think if you looked at his starts, he doesn't always go too deep into games. He's kind of like basically a six inning guy at best. And I think this year he had more starts where he went at least six innings than last year. He still struggles he still struggled in some of the same ways, but I mean, that's what, if this is his development, then it was progress. It was a step in the right direction, and you certainly heard less from him as far as like self-flagellating in front of the TV cameras after a start like that. So I think this was a good year for him.
Justin, that's a great call, because one of the big problems with Velasquez was worries about his health. He's going to make 30 starts this season.
Yeah,
did anybody think huge. Vince Velasquez was going to make 30 starts this season? It's only 143 innings, but that is about 12 innings more than his previous high in 2016. Listen to some of these improvements. The ERA is slightly better, but it's 4.59. The ERA is not great, but he's got a 3.66 FIP, which is a statistic that the Phillies really care about. He's increased his strikeouts per nine from 8.5 last year to 10.01. His walks went down from 4.25 to 3.59 last year, and he only gave up 0.94 home runs per nine, basically sliced that number in half to the point where he was a 2.7 win player, according to Fangraphs. That's a valuable starter. That's a valuable guy to have. The peripheral, and I gotta believe, along with Pivetta too, Liz, both of these guys, their numbers would have been way better if they had any semblance at all of a decent defense behind.
Yeah. I mean, and I think almost every Phillies pitcher has suffered. I think some more than others.
Yep.
Jake Arrieta has suffered a lot. And after that first time that he sort of had that outburst, he hasn't said anything else about it. I don't think that means he stopped thinking and or fuming about it. But the defense was an issue this year. And my biggest concern, more than anything else, is whether this is a whether Gabe Kapler and Matt Klentak doing this weird defensive positioning, not even just positioning, just putting dudes in places where they don't play. They're not used to playing. Mm-hmm. If this is a feature or a bug, if this is how they intend to field a baseball team year after year, that's not only going to be hard to sell to fans, it's going to be just hard to win, period. If they think they can do it, more power to them. I just don't necessarily think that's, you know, a great thing to do. That's my main concern with the Phillies going forward, is that, you know, this was a really cool and fun experiment to do on a year where no one was expecting much. Now let's get back to it. Are we done with this? Are we done doing this weird, ridiculous bullshit? Can we just get back to winning baseball games? Like, if the Phillies want to win baseball games by reinventing baseball, that's great, but that's not why we're here. We're here to just win some damn baseball games.
And I got to say, on the point of Aaron Nola, as long as we're talking about starting pitching, I mean, good teams are comprised of Aaron Nolas. So to see him want to go out there and make all his starts is like really encouraging. But the Phillies are, you know, they're like any team, they're the sum of their parts. And the biggest complaint we had about the Phillies this year was inconsistency. And if you zoomed in on any one player, your biggest complaint would be, well, he was inconsistent. So you have more guys like Aaron Nola on this team, or more guys like Vince Velasquez who can take an example from Aaron Nola, who leads by example, like, you know, another gruff young Phillies player of the recent past. And maybe you have more guys on your team who are just exemplifying that sort of playing style. So the more Aaron Nolas we get on this team, and the more Aaron Nola types we get, the better the Phillies will be, the more consistent they'll be, because he was really the only consistent player on the team this year.
Well, we're going to be talking a lot about this. This regular season has been fun for us to talk about this team, because we haven't been able to have much fun talking about the Major League team in the last few years. So many Hit and Season podcasts and formerly Felsky Files podcasts were talking about the minor league team, the minor league players, all the guys, the future, the guys that hadn't yet come up. And these guys are all here now, and some of them were good for parts of this year. Some of them were not good for parts of this year. Now we have a really, really, really interesting offseason to talk about. This might be the most exciting and interesting offseason we've ever seen as Phillies fans. So this podcast is going to keep going strong all offseason long, because this might even be more exciting than the regular season. Hopefully it's not disappointing. That there's certainly that possibility, but I think this baseball team is going to go and make some big improvements here in the offseason. Last thing to touch on before we get out of here, guys. Are you going to watch any of these games this week? Any of these Phillies games this week? I imagine that I'll probably try to catch one or two, simply because this is the last week of Phillies baseball and for this season. And without the pressure, Liz, of needing this team to win baseball games now, maybe they, some of these young guys that we had wanted to get a little bit more playing time, get some playing time. I know I was reading today that the team got together to talk about how they want to handle the last 8 days of the season, and they have the entire 40-man roster at their disposal. I'm kind of curious to see how they're going to play it out here over the last 8 days. I'm not going to rearrange my schedule to watch these Phillies games in Colorado and the last three games against Atlanta, but I don't know. How many of these games do you think you'll watch this week?
I'm probably going to have to – well, no, I think we have a good fight writer who is out in Colorado. I think he's going to take some of the Colorado games. Thank God. I might watch some of those. I'll probably end up having to recap the weekend games, the last three, and I'll be happy to do that. Happy to watch them is a different story. I wish they weren't against Atlanta, because now it's just like they won already and now they're shoving it in our faces. And the Phillies aren't going to put up, you know, maybe they'll put up a fight, but it won't even matter. It's all over. Yeah. So.
Yeah. What do you have any alternative viewing in mind for when the Phillies are all done here? I mean, I'm going to watch the baseball playoffs and the NFL and, you know, right now I'm in the middle on Netflix of going through Star Trek: The Next Generation. I hadn't watched it in forever. I'm going through season 3 right now. So yes, I'm one of those guys. But
nothing wrong with that.
That's kind of where I am.
See, The Good Place, one of my favorite shows.
The Good Place is good. Yeah, that's a good show.
It comes back next week. Watch that. Mm-hmm. I command you. I mean, I'll watch the playoffs, sure. You know, beyond that, I'll probably fire up. You know, for a number of seasons, I've done a full Friends rewatch after the end of the regular season. Last year, I didn't do it. I think I did Frasier instead. Just give it a break. So I don't know what I'll do this season. I might do Parks and Rec instead. I might do Community. I might do Happy Endings. Those are all shows. If you don't know them, please check them out and find them because they are my favorites. And I would love to talk to you about them and not talk all about right. baseball for a little bit.
All right, Justin, how about you? You know, how many Phillies games are you going to watch this week? And what are your alternatives?
I think I might just wake up on my couch emerging from a blackout stupor and realize that I'm watching them just by sheer instinct. But, you know, these games are we've been talking about how the Philly season is over at different points over the last month and a half. Talking now, I keep having to remind myself, oh, yeah, there are more games the Phillies will play. It's going to be a long off season. It'll be a more interesting off season, but there'll be long stretches of this off season where there's no baseball. There's nothing to talk about baseball wise. And we will miss seeing baseball being played. That can happen, you know, in the postseason too, where it's like, yeah, I wish the Phillies were playing in this. Then I'd be a little more emotionally invested.
Oh man.
So
did you see on one of the games when they had Aaron Nola leading off the playoffs commercial? I was like,
yeah,
oh,
they got you.
Man, that would have been
that
cool.
That means somewhere along the line, some production team was like, the Philly, if you got any Philly shots, you can throw them in there. They're looking good. So somebody was like, this is real. Phillies are real.
Someone was bullish.
I think I'll definitely be watching the Phillies just because we don't have them for too much longer. And it'll be a long winter. As far as alternative viewing, yeah, I'll definitely watch the playoffs. Definitely tune in for the Sixers. That's going to be,
an excellent
season just from an entertainment standpoint. I really, in my, later part of my adult life, more recent part of my adult life, the NBA has just entertainment values. It's through the roof. And
it is good.
Great.
It's really good right
Sixers
now.
Culture, fan culture to get involved with. So I'll definitely be watching the Sixers. I'm really into Lost in Space on Netflix right now. I think that show is awesome. So if you're into Star Trek, John, you would probably dig Lost in Space. Because they're not fighting Cylons or alien parasites or anything. Not that I have anything wrong. Not that there's anything wrong with that. But in this case, the threats are all environmental and conniving humans and stuff. But it's a lot more about that than I think you'd be into that.
Cool.
So I'm really into that right now. If anybody my girlfriend's very into long, dense documentaries about freight. Or roads. So, if anybody's a fan of those can also be on your television if you choose.
Okay. I'll probably fire up some Ken Burns documentaries over the off season. I know that there's I'm actually a 55-year-old man. I want to watch the Civil War again and I want to watch the new one on the Vietnam War.
And the Man in the High Castle is coming back to Amazon Prime at some point here over the next couple of weeks, and I'm a big Man in the High Castle fan, so that's nice. I cannot wait for that to come back. So
PBS is doing a
go ahead, Justin.
Documentary series on Native Americans. Actually, I just forgot that we're still recording, and this is part of the show.
Just going to say we should give some non-baseball during the off season. We should give some non-baseball recommendations for entertainment, whether it's television or music or other podcasts or books. We should do that. We should branch out.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's a great idea. So this is the first of those, and we'll just have to remind ourselves to do that because it's a muscle we don't ordinarily flex. But that's a great idea. And for those of you who are looking for some different stuff too, I want to mention this before we get out of here. With the Patreon, we have continued our Patreon for Hittin' Season, but we've added another tier, a $10 a month tier for Patreon. for folks who want to become Patreon members. So for $5 folks who get all the podcasts that we do there, there's an opportunity to, you know, you can move up. And we've had a couple people do that. We're looking for more folks. And I'm going to be putting out a Phillies baseball newsletter on Mondays for the $10 tier. But one of the things I'm looking forward to is the continued success after dark, where I think a lot of this kind of stuff would go really well too, you know, because it's going to talk, you guys are going to talk about baseball, and you know, I'll jump in from time to time too if you guys will have me on the show.
Of course.
And you know, we can just, you know, have a couple of beers or a bourbon and just talk about, you know, what we saw on Lost in Space the other night or something, and invite some listeners with us from time to time as well.
Yeah,
so,
it might be about baseball, it might not, but we'll be drinking, yeah. That's for sure.
If Liz has her way, we'll be talking about crocheting and whatnot from time
that
to time.
That is not
so
true.
It'll be.
I won't bore anybody with talk of crocheting. I will bore all of you with talk about how much I love 16th century homes, which is also a true thing about me.
Were you a This Old House lady? Do you like watching this, like the reruns of This Old House? It was a big show I had to watch as a kid with my dad, and I hated it.
Yeah, I watched that a little bit. I just love old houses. I don't know what it is. You know, I love old houses. I've always been interested in sort of like the Revolutionary War period. And so I mm-hmm. maybe we'll talk about that, and then everyone will unsubscribe immediately.
That's right.
We'll have no listeners.
That would be fun too.
I will not be talking about any of that.
Well, whatever, it'll be fun. And if you want to be a Patreon member of Hittin' Season and get some of the bonus stuff that we got coming up, go to patreon.com/Hittin' Season. As for episode 215 of Hittin' Season, that'll do it, everybody. Again, want to remind you, if you haven't already, go to Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and subscribe to the Good Fight Podcast feed. Also, subscribe to the Bleeding Green Nation podcast feed as well, our Eagles SB Nation partners, where I'm hosting shows for them as well here during the Eagles season. I do a weekly preview show with Brandon Lee Gowton, and I did the post-game show following the Eagles-Colts game this afternoon, so make sure you check those out by going to the Bleeding Green Nation podcast feed. And like Justin said, if you're into the Sixers, there's a Liberty Ballers podcast feed, the SB Nation Sixers site, as well as the Broad Street Hockey podcast feed for Flyers fans as well. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. We'll talk to y'all next time right here on Hittin' Season.
Hi, this is Jim.
And this is Max.
Check out our podcast, The Step Over, the Liberty Ballers Podcast Network, for all of your Sixers needs.
Player analysis, game breakdowns, who would look coolest in a headband, and more.
Subscribe to Liberty Ballers podcast feed on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts, and check out The Step Over, a podcast about Sixers basketball.
Mostly.